Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
New York State is functionally bankrupt. I like to use that term because when you think bankruptcy, you think in terms of restructuring. And that's where we are as a state.
And that is, of course, Democratic New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Good morning, Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. Cuomo is reflecting on the serious problems that New York's budget is facing, along with just about every other state budget right now, except maybe Wyoming or Montana, or a state that actually has some oil revenue. But most of the states are facing a serious crisis right now. Cuomo has promised not to raise taxes and to cut services. Then, of course, there's that little standoff in Wisconsin we've heard so much about. Protests in those known Midwestern hotbeds, Ohio and Indiana, gigantic deficits. What's going on with state budgets that they're suddenly getting so much attention? Joining us to help us understand how it came to this point is Brookings Institution Fellow Tracy Gordon. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
So, Tracy, why is it that state budgets are suddenly coming into such sharp focus? You know, I've been reporting on state budgets for years. And usually at the point in the conversation, when you start talking about state budgets, people look over your shoulder and sort of you can see them making a little mental calculation. Is there somebody more interesting to speak to at this cocktail party? But now it's on everybody's lips. Why?
Isn't that fun? Now everyone wants to talk about what we want to talk about. Well, the recession really walloped state revenues. They declined by 30% in fiscal year 2009. So states are really still climbing out of that revenue hole. And all the while, spending pressures continued. So people still wanted to see cops on the street. They still wanted to be able to send their kids to schools. And at the same time, you had more people who were demanding services because they were falling on hard times themselves. So they were going on to Medicaid. They were demanding unemployment insurance. And so states have a short-term problem with the recession, but then there are also longer-term problems that are becoming more apparent now.
New York's former governor, David Paterson, used to have a chart and used to make the argument, look, it's not the fact that we are spending so much. It's the fact that we lost so much money after the financial collapse that is propelling such a crisis. Was he right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a number of things at play here. One is the fact that, as I said, revenues really fell in the recession, and that's especially true for states like New York, high-income states where you have a lot of people that have income from capital gains and the stock market. And so when their income suffered, the state's income suffered. But then on the spending side, you know, you also had states that during the boom committed to ongoing spending programs that continue to cost money. And I think just like individuals and businesses, when times are tough, you try to do the easy things first and sort of hope that you can ride out the storm. A lot of states did that, but now those solutions are off the table and they have to really get down to business.
Let's talk about healthcare in a second, but I'd like to talk about education because it does seem like education budgets keep growing and growing and growing. And yet this is not felt on an individual school district level. My kids' principals are constantly sending emails saying, you know, we're in a crisis, we need more money, please help. And this has been going on for some time. So I'm wondering, how is it that states keep spending more on education and there seems to be less on the table?
Well, that's really the difficulty with a lot of areas of state and local spending. You know, one thing that's worth pointing out for those of us who love talking about state budgets is that state and local governments really provide most of the things that we think of as government in this country. Federal government is very good at sending out checks to people and sending checks to state and local governments to provide these services, but really state and local government is where the rubber meets the road. And it's not immediately obvious, where the spending goes to a lot of voters. So they look around and they see that it looks like their roads are deteriorating and it looks like their class sizes are getting bigger. But the thing that's sort of hard to explain is that there are a lot of things that drive spending. And so you want to know about not just, how many dollars are being spent, say, per taxpayers, but how many students do we have in the state? Maybe the student population is growing. Maybe the student population is growing in such a way that you've got more kids who are more expensive to teach because English is their second language. You might have to pay teachers more because you live in a high-cost state, and so you have to be able to compete with the rest of the labor market.
Why would it make sense that a state like New York's education budget is growing mm-hmm. at a time when New York lost so much population that it's losing a member of Congress?
Well, it has a lot to do with salaries in New York. So I actually did some work on this comparing California, New York, Texas, Florida, Illinois. California and New York are very similar because they both pay high salaries to public sector workers. And that's largely because it's an expensive state, but not all the difference is attributable to that. So there is where you could see the issue of unions, or some people might say that you have to pay more to attract quality. We didn't go into too much of the difference, but we did see those similarities between those two states. It's really a question of salaries in New York more than enrollment, whereas other states like California and Texas, that's where you've got a lot of influx of population.
Well, I know when you start talking about salaries, then, you know, people's blood pressure starts to rise. And I know this from being all over the country, that there is a sense among non-public sector workers that, you know, I have lost everything. I have mm-hmm. maybe lost my job. I have no retirement savings. I have no savings for my child's college. So why am I paying mm-hmm. for somebody else so that they can do all of these things? On the other hand, you know, you think about sort of the whole, you know, brouhaha about Wall Street bonuses, and the banks are saying, we've got to pay these huge bonuses or we won't get the most talented employees. Mm-hmm. So you've got this tension here between, if we don't pay public service workers, we're going to be left with people that aren't the best and the brightest. On the mm-hmm. other hand, you know, this sense of diminishing resources and that it's not affordable for the private sector to continue to support that. Can you break that down?
Well, it's true, and I can understand where people are coming from. If you look at the employment numbers, it's always private sector employment that starts to fall first in a recession, and it's fallen by more in this recession. So private employment is down by about 6%. State and local employment is only down by about 2%. So it looks like, yeah, people in the private sector are certainly suffering. The problem with that is that that's the snapshot today. Going out into the future, it looks like there are going to be more cuts ahead for state and local government. And that's just because it takes a while for something like that revenue drop I was describing to work its way through the system. Like I said, initially states try to do the easy things first and maybe have short-term spending cuts, maybe like in the state of Maryland where I work, that you have to take a furlough day so you don't get paid for 5 days, and that's a temporary pay cut rather than actually laying people off or restructuring contracts with public employees. So like I said, they do the easy things first, and some people are saying really it's this coming budget cycle that's going to be the hardest yet, because those solutions have already been tried and the federal stimulus dollars are going away. So we will probably be seeing more cuts in terms of state and local employment going forward.
My guest is Tracy Gordon, a fellow at the Brookings Institution. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about state budgets. And Tracy, you know, one of the sort of initial points of the stimulus bill, which was enacted just a little over 2 years ago, almost exactly, was to put money into state and local government coffers so they wouldn't have to lay off people. And mm-hmm. the theory was this is going to help save a lot of jobs and thereby keep the middle class with purchasing power so that people would continue to spend money and help the economy get out of a recession. But in fact, all it did was sort of just kind of prop up this or, you know, delay the question until now. So why didn't that work?
That's actually the subject of the book I'm working on while I'm at Brookings this year. But in fact, people think that it did work because it did at least prevent those layoffs in the short term. The hope was that the economy would be coming back right about now. And unfortunately, we seem to have very persistent high unemployment with this recession.
It depends on what you mean by it worked. I mean, it worked mm-hmm. and perhaps, you know, make delaying this current discussion that we're having, but mm-hmm. it doesn't seem to have sort of let state governments hang on and weather, you know, the storm.
State budget gaps were really quite huge. Right now, looking back, it looks like they had to deal with, and when I talk about a gap, it's the difference between revenues and keeping spending at the same level of services that they were providing before the recession. So it's kind of a it's not a real number in terms of the deficit they had to close at the end of the year, but their projected shortfalls going forward, the size of the problem they had to face at the beginning of each budget cycle. But if you add up all of those numbers throughout the recession, it was about $500 billion. The stimulus was about $280 billion, including things like grants for building roads. The part that was really just to plug state budget holes was only about $150 billion. So it was a modest portion of the total problem, and it was temporary. So I think that, you know, a lot of governors will say, quite honestly, and on both sides of the aisle, that they really saw it as an essential lifeline. The issue is that now it's going away.
I wonder, had Scott Walker been around and been governor in those days, whether he would have agreed with what you just said. But let's listen to a clip of him. He had some very stern words yesterday for the Democratic legislators who have fled the state. So let's listen to some of his fireside chat from yesterday.
That is why I'm asking the missing senators to come back to work. Do the job you were elected to do. You don't have to like the outcome or even the vote. But as part of the world's greatest democracy, you should be here in Madison, right here in this Capitol. The missing Senate Democrats must know that their failure to come to work will lead to dire consequences very soon. Failure to act on this budget repair bill means at least 1,500 state employees will be laid off before the end of June. If there's no agreement by July 1st, another 5,000 to 6,000 state workers, as well as 5,000 to 6,000 local government employees, would also be laid off.
All right. Tracy Gordon, we're not going to sort of go deep into the Wisconsin discussion now, but what is the solution for governors like Scott Walker? How do they get their spending in control to move forward without doing some of the drastic steps that are being discussed there?
Yeah, you know, I think when I was referring to the governors who are grateful for the stimulus, I was thinking actually of Governor Schwarzenegger, my home state of California, who said, you know, for all the governors that were saying they were going to turn down the payments, he'd be happy to take theirs. So this new crop of governors, though, is really, you know, coming into, as I said, a much, you know, a much bigger problem when you think about the solutions that are no longer available, like the federal stimulus funds. And so you really, you know, you have to give them credit for sort of taking a real whack at the problem. You know, in terms of spending and revenue solutions in some states. But, you know, this question of looking at wages and salaries and benefits, you know, it's not surprising in a sense that that's where the governors are looking, because that is about 50% of total state and local spending.
Are there governors looking at revenue solutions? I mean, you would think if anybody would be raising this, it would be, for example, Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, very strong union state. But even he has said off the table tax hikes.
That's a good point.
Is anybody putting them on the table?
Governor Jerry Brown, again, in my home state, is actually asking for an extension of some temporary increases in income sales and vehicle license fee, income sales taxes and vehicle license fees. He has to get approval from the voters for that, and they actually rejected a similar measure a couple years ago. So, you know, it's doubtful that, you know, other governors might have already made that political calculation and decided not to even try to go for a revenue increase.
All right. We have to end it there. We will obviously be watching what governors do in terms of revenue solutions versus cutting spending solutions, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about this. Tracy Gordon, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And when we come back, we'll travel across the ocean to, not the place you think, Uganda. Be right back.